This episode of The Amateur Traveler is brought to you by Audible. Please visit audiblepodcast.com/traveler for your free audiobook download.
I got my bags packed on a roll. I'm heading out there and I'm ready to go. Looking real good in my passport photo.
Amateur Traveler, episode 178. Today, the Amateur Traveler goes to the eastern slope of the Sierra Nevada Mountains, California and Nevada. We'll talk about majestic beauty and just a little bit of scandalous history today in the Amateur Traveler. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into today's interview, I do have a couple news stories for you. The first one is there is a list published of America's top 10 tourist attractions by number of visitors. Some of these won't surprise you, like Times Square is number one, the Las Vegas Strip is number two, number three is the National Mall, the number four is Faneuil Hall Market in Boston, number five, Disney World's Magic Kingdom, six, Disneyland, so they have two on the top 10. Number seven is Fisherman's Wharf in San Francisco, which is odd because we generally recommend avoiding that. Number eight is Niagara Falls in New York. Number nine, the Great Smoky Mountains, which is the most popular national park in the country. And number 10 is the Navy Pier in Chicago. And then speaking of lists, the other list that I liked that I saw, the UK Telegraph had a list of 20 stupid questions asked by tourists. I loved questions like, in what month is the May Day demonstration? Or other questions like, why on earth did they build Windsor Castle on the flight path of Heathrow? And then speaking of stupid tourist behavior, a tourist in St. Petersburg, Florida, wanted to show a woman who was afraid of heights that it was safe to lean over a six-floor hotel balcony. He fell off. He did actually survive the fall, and hopefully he is wiser for it. If you want to learn something from this experience, check out the links in the show notes to all three of those stories, as well as other news items that caught my eye this week at amateurtraveler.com. Before we get into this week's interview, I want to thank our sponsor, which is audible.com. Audible.com is the internet's leading provider in spoken audio entertainment, with over 50,000 titles to choose from. You can sign up for a free trial today and get your free downloadable audiobook by going to audiblepodcast.com/traveler. I'm still listening to Bill Bryson's The Thunderbolt Kid. If you are interested in a different travel-related title, I might suggest Under the Tuscan Sun, which is Francis May's wonderful book about life in Italy from an American perspective. Get your free book, again, at audiblepodcast.com/traveler. I'd like to welcome to the show Doug McConnell, who's come to talk to us about the Eastern Sierras in California and Nevada. Doug, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. It's one of my favorite places on Earth, and so I'm happy to gab about it.
And I should mention that I have known Doug for some time. I don't know how long you did the Bay Area Backroads TV show.
Well, I did the Backroads show, aired on Channel 4, KRON Television, in San Francisco, from 1985. It's actually still running, and it was in complete continuous production until last fall. Our station has filed for bankruptcy, so they're struggling. But I did Backroads from 1993, really all the way through the present. So a great, long, good run doing stories that we love to do.
So I've enjoyed hearing Doug, and many of you who are outside the Bay Area haven't had a chance to see his work yet, but you will have a chance. Now, you've got a new show coming up on PBS, as I understand.
That's right, on public television. We are launching a new series here that will begin locally in Northern California in April of 2009, and then will be distributed to public television stations around the country beginning in the fall. The show's title is Open Road with Doug McConnell, Exploring the West. So its geographic range for the series will be essentially Alaska through Canada down to Mexico and from the Rockies or let's say the Black Hills of South Dakota all the way west out to Hawaii. So it's a pretty big footprint, big iconic region on Earth, and lots of landscapes and cities and exploration and adventure and history and the environment and all the stuff that my crew and I love to do.
Now, as Doug and I talked, it didn't seem like it would make sense to try and do that whole ranging scope on one episode of The Amateur Traveler. So we did decide to focus on the Eastern Sierras. Now, most people who've been to the Sierras have only been to the western slope, the California slope of that. What's on the other side of the hill?
actually a big movie set, Chris, really. There's nothing. It's a Hollywood movie set. Actually, there's some fun stories about Hollywood and movie making. I'll get to that in a little while, I suppose. But Sierra Nevada is this wonderful north-south mountain range that really stretches from the southern Cascades, Mount Lassen, the southern edge of the Cascades, and then northern California. It stretches all the way south along the sort of the eastern side of the state of California, all the way down to the Mojave Desert. And it's a long, long run of mountains. And it gets, you know, increasingly steep and jagged and dramatic from roughly Lake Tahoe south all the way down to about Mojave. And it's all caused by geological uplifts that essentially tilted the landscape on the east side of the Sierra up really sharply, just like it's been lifted up. So it goes from deep valleys to tall peaks very, very swiftly. And then at sort of the western slope of the Sierra, where most people tend to go, you know, there's a more gradual slope down to the
right,
central
more
valley
foothills.
Of California.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with real foothills. The eastern Sierra has essentially no foothills. It's all straight up and straight down. And so I love the whole Sierra Nevada. Just fair disclosure on this. I love, no matter where you can go up in that mountain range, it's extraordinary, it's beautiful, it's diverse. On the western slope, you have the principal access to places like Yosemite and Sequoia National Park and Kings Canyon and all that sort of thing. And, you know, so it's got lots of great stuff. The eastern side, I love for its drama. It is one of the most visually dramatic bits of geography on Earth. And I love traveling all over the world, and I've had a chance to go to a lot of places, lots more on my list to do. But every time I come back and every time I spend time in the eastern Sierra Nevada, I'm always struck by just how extraordinary and extraordinarily beautiful. And if you're a photographer or somebody who enjoys doing a video or film the way I do, boy, it is a photographer's paradise.
Now, when you say dramatic, other people might use the term sparse or rugged or barren even.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's definitely not as welcoming a landscape as some landscapes are. What stands out for you?
It's not welcoming in the sense that it's typically not sort of lush and verdant. It does not look like the English countryside, that's for sure. But I happen to have a real affection for it. Let me just kind of backtrack 1 second and say that the eastern Sierra has long been sort of a principal playground of people from Southern California. It's sort of been in the geographic hegemony and political hegemony of Southern California. So that for your listeners here who are from the Los Angeles region and Southern California, many of them have spent time in eastern Sierra going up Highway 395. That's the main highway, U.S. Highway 395, that follows the base of the Sierra Range on the east side. And of course, you know, the history a little bit is that Southern California essentially, well, how should we put it, stole the water.
I think there's a word that's usually used, but...
that's right. You know, took the water
Mr.
by
Mulholland there,
by
yeah.
crook from the ranchers who lived in the Owens Valley, which is along the east side of the Sierra Nevada. So in an odd way, that portion of the eastern Sierra, the Owens Valley, was actually light on rainfall, was lush in the sense that rivers ran through it, and that water was then taken 100 years ago and piped basically down to Southern California to begin to fuel the growth and development of Southern California.
Right.
And so there's a lot of great stories around that. I just want to put in a plug for a great book on this very topic. If you are interested in reading about the history of water and the American West, the classic in that genre was written by an old friend of mine, Mark Reisner, passed away a few years ago, but he wrote a book called Cadillac Desert.
Mm-hmm.
It talks about all of the water issues in the West, and he's a great storyteller, a great writer. It's a compelling book, and he does a fabulous job telling the story of the taking of the water from the Owens Valley to Southern California. Anyway, as a little boy, I was born in Southern California, and among my earliest memories in life are memories from the eastern Sierra Nevada, going there with my mom and dad, who first went there in 1928. They would go up every summer. We'd spend several weeks up there in an area just between Mono Lake, the little town of Levining, and the town of Bridgeport.
Mm-hmm.
Inside the Sierra Nevada, a group of lakes called Virginia Lakes. Up at around 9,000 feet, we would camp every summer in these glacial lakes and play and hike. So I have these very, very, very warm, affectionate memories of that area. So it's an area that does welcome people, but I think it is sparse. And yet, because you have so much geographic uplift from the depths of the valleys below all the way up to the summits of Mount Whitney and others over 14,000 feet, you have quite a range, and in that you have lots of sort of ecological habitats, so it's pretty darn diverse.
So if I go, what's going to be the biggest surprise that I'll run into?
That's a really good question. Well, I think what will happen if you go is, first of all, even though it's really hot there sometimes in the summer, don't use your air conditioner. Roll the window down and let the smell of the sagebrush along Highway 395 and along the base of those mountains soak in as you're driving along. I think that's one of my first and foremost impressions of the area is the smell of the place. Mm-hmm. And I love the smell of sage. So that's all the way along the road is here. Let's say you're heading north from Southern California and you're driving up. Certainly it won't be a surprise, but you will be stunned by, I think, every mile of scenery as you go, as you look at these rugged mountains really coming up out of the Owens Valley. It's the deepest, I believe, the deepest rift valley in North America, the Owens Valley, from its depths to the summit of Mount Whitney over 14,000 feet and some other 13,000 and 14,000-foot mountains on the Sierra side. And on the eastern side, the White Mountains are on the eastern side. They're also spectacular. I'll talk about those in a minute. So a surprise might be just how extraordinarily, jaw-droppingly beautiful it is for several hundred miles as you follow that Highway 395 through little towns like Lone Pine and Big Pine and Bishop and on up into Mammoth Lakes and then past Mono Lake and over through Bridgeport and on up towards Lake Tahoe. It just goes on and on and on. So that's maybe a surprise. It's just all beautiful. It looks good. It smells good. And it is completely enticing. If you're an outdoors person, you'll want to get off that road and onto those trails and into those mountains, and you won't be disappointed.
And where should we pull over? We've got hundreds of miles of road, so where should we stop?
Well, you should take as much time as possible. Go as often as possible. There are many, many places. As you're heading up, one of the places you want to stop for sure, let's say again, coming up from the south to the north, let's go that direction, you get to the town of Lone Pine. Mm-hmm. And it's a little town at the base of Mount Whitney, and you'll look up to your west and you'll see, on a clear day, you'll see Mount Whitney, the highest point in the lower 48 states, standing there. You can take the road that goes into Whitney, the Whitney Portal, on that way into those mountains, and they're right there, you know, they're right in front of you. There are a few little foothills, but they're really interesting foothills. They're kind of wild rock formations, big rounded rock formations. And you'll swear, as you're driving through them, that you've been there before. You'll know, even if you've never been hundreds of miles from there, you'll know that you've been there before. And the fact is, you probably have been in your imagination through movies and commercials since the 1920s, and actually even before that. These are called the Alabama Hills. And the Alabama Hills, I think, are part of the Bureau of Land Management property. But they are these rock formations in which every single Western movie practically that's ever been made and been filmed by all the great Western heroes, going back to Roy Rogers and Hopalong Cassidy and The Lone Ranger, all those, many of those films were shot in the Alabama Hills. Hmm. And so you've seen the landscape before. And movies going way back in time, movies such as Gunga Din was filmed there. And more recent movies were Tremors with Kevin Bacon, one of my classic kind of silly movies. That was filmed out there. And I think even a piece of the recent movie with Robert Downey Jr., Iron Man.
Mm-hmm.
Iron Man, yeah, some of that was shot there. It's supposed to be Afghanistan and that region. No, it's in fact the Alabama Hills. So it's really neat, and the town of Lone Pine, you know, helps to interpret the history of the movie making there. So there has been books published by it, so you'll want to stop in town, you'll want to visit sort of the local museum there that's been put in since I've been there, that describes the movie making history. There's, I think, an annual film festival that happens there in October. It's really terrific. It's a great surprise. It's a great place. And then right up that road, you keep going up the road, then you climb, and the road comes to its end at around, I don't know, 8,000 feet or so. So that's the beginning of the trail to Mount Whitney. You have to get permission to hike up there to get to the top of Whitney. But anyway, so that's one surprise, and that's one place to stop. And there are many more. I can keep going.
Well, please do.
Okay. We have a couple days here for all these stories?
Sure.
A little past a Lone Pine up the road on your left-hand side is a place you must stop. And that place is a bittersweet national historic site called Manzanar. Manzanar was one of the Japanese internment camps during World War II. Mm-hmm. When people of Japanese descent and first and second generation, people who had been born and raised in the United States, many of them children and families, were taken and put into these internment camps around the West and elsewhere as the war with Japan heated up. So Manzanar was one of the prime internment camps, and the National Park Service, thanks to the hard work of many Japanese Americans, have established that place. They interpret that history, and it's a must stop. It's a reminder of a history that we can't be proud of here in America, but it's an important thing to know, and it's an extraordinary sight, a heartbreakingly beautiful sight, and that dry desert floor with this incredible mountain landscape behind us, but to realize the displacement that took place during World War II and the lessons that has to teach us. So that's worth a stop, absolutely, a must stop. Further down the road, as you're heading up towards Bishop, there'll be a turnoff, and I don't have my map in front of me, but there's a highway, you'll check it out, there's a highway that goes to the east and goes up into what's called the White Mountains. It's a beautiful drive. It'll climb up, you'll go east, and then you'll turn north on another road, and it'll wind up high, high, high in the White Mountains, which are, again, this huge, shorter than the Sierra, the real tall mountain range just to the east of the valley below the Sierra to the west, the White Mountains to the east. And the road will take you up about 9,000 feet or thereabouts, and you'll come to a grove of bristlecone pine trees. And this is one of the premier places in the world. There are a couple of other great spots, but this is as good as it gets for seeing the oldest trees on Earth. I think that's also, that's probably National Forest Land, maybe BLM, I can't remember for sure, but in any case, the trail will take you through the bristlecone pine groves. These are trees that can be as old as 5,000 years.
And we should say, when you say the oldest, people are probably picturing the tallest or the biggest.
No, they're not. That's right. No, the tallest trees are the redwoods on the California coast. Mm-hmm. The biggest trees are the sequoia redwoods on the western slope of the Sierra Nevada and groves around Sequoia National Park, Kings Canyon, and Yosemite. But the oldest trees, not the oldest living things, but the oldest trees, are the bristlecone pines, and they exist in isolated groves at around 9, 10, 11,000 feet in these sort of environments that hardly anything else can survive in. They can survive harsh winters, cold, snow, and they're just beautiful, gnarly shaped old trees, and then each one a work of art. They're just extraordinary to go see and to be close to it. They're beautiful. It's extraordinary to stand with the tree in the silence and to imagine the history that that tree has literally seen going back to 3,000 years B.C. Breathtaking. Kind of breathtaking because you're up pretty high, too. So. Anyway, but it's great. And so that's a really neat thing to do as you're heading north. Then you backtrack back down again, get back on Highway 395, go into the town of Bishop, which is sort of one of the main towns along Highway 395, one of the two main towns. And you know how many people live in Bishop? It's 4,000 or 5,000 people, something like that. One place, please stop when you're in Bishop. Go to the Mountain Light Gallery. Mountain Light Gallery is an old bank that was beautifully restored and became the home base for Galen and Barbara Rowell. Galen was one of the world's great adventure photographers. His wife, Barbara, was his partner in every way possible. She herself was a fine artist, a photographer, a writer. Galen was a great writer. Many, many books, many adventures all over the world, supporters of great causes of conservation and protection of wild places and indigenous people. In any case, Mountain Light Gallery is there, and it has all the works of Galen Rowell. It is an extraordinary place to visit. The staff is wonderful. Galen and Barbara died in a plane crash in August of 2002, returning home to Bishop after one of their many, many journeys. This one, they were up off the coast of Alaska, and it was a real tragic loss. I want to put in a plug for one project I work on, which is called the Rowell Award for the Art of Adventure. It's an award that many of us who were friends and family of Galen and Barbara organized after their death. We award every year the next generation of a Barbara or Galen who are adventurers, artists, and activists. If you go to rowellaward.com, you can read all about what we're up to and about the past winners, and we'll have our next award winner later on this year. Anyway, that's in Bishop. That's a must-stop in Bishop. Then, as you drive up Highway 395, again, there are tons of things to go see and do. There are trails that go up into the Sierra to the west. But you get up the road, you get out of the Owens Valley, and you climb this long grade, the Sherwin Grade, I think it is, and you go up, 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 and you get up to a higher plateau, and then you're at a higher elevation, and you get a little further along, and you come to Mammoth Lakes. And, of course, that's a very famous ski area in the wintertime and resort in the summertime. And a good base camp, lots of hotels and motels and campgrounds and all these kinds of things. Good access into the wild lands, the higher Sierra Nevada behind you. A little further, you get off Highway 395, take what's called the June Lake Loop, which will take you off the main road, but a beautiful drive loop around June Lake area. It's a beautiful spot. Great place to go in the fall, especially when the leaves are changing. Anyway, it's quite a beautiful spot. Get back on Highway 395, and pretty darn soon, you pass the turnoff to Tioga Pass, which is a road that goes way up over the Sierra Nevada, the highest official pass in California, and then we take you into Yosemite National Park. Mm-hmm. But we're going to stand 390, and that's a beautiful drive, by the way, going over Tioga Pass.
Oh,
that's
it
a whole
is,
other
indeed.
Story.
Yeah.
Come just past that road, you see Mono Lake, this incredible lake that is three times saltier than the Pacific Ocean, and home to, I think it's one of the largest breeding grounds of gulls, a species of gulls, or all gulls. And anyway, there's a lot of gulls over there. And it is an extraordinary place that when Southern California was stealing the water from Northern California, they were draining Mono Lake.
Right.
So it was getting lower and lower and lower, which is affecting the wildlife that was there, the ecological health of the lake. And after many years of court battles, finally the judicial system decided that Mono Lake needed to be protected and saved, and its water needed to be allowed to come back into the lake and bring it back up to, I believe, its 1983 level. And so Mono Lake is filling back up, a great win for the environment. But Mono Lake's an amazing place. And the town of Lee Vining is right there at the edge of the lake. They have some great visitor centers that interpret that lake and its natural history. And then you can take some hikes down around the lake and go see these sort of odd-shaped tufa towers that are
right
out on the lake. And anyway, that's amazing. And then
yeah,
finally,
we probably should explain just a little bit what a tufa.
I can't describe it very well. my science is bad. Chris, how would you describe it?
Well, as I recall, there are calcium carbonate deposits that are at least twice my height.
That's
in
right.
Places there that are odd shapes and sizes there on the southern edge of the lake there. But
exactly right, and calcium carbonate is right. Now that you say it, my science was a little fuzzy here. But no, that's right. They really are. They're like these really odd, creative, structural forms created by a wild-eyed sculptor. They're beautiful and fascinating and otherworldly, really. And then north of that, the road goes way up over Conway Summit, at about 8,000 feet, and then the road to the west takes you up, 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 and into the Virginia Lakes that I talked about earlier, where my mom and dad used to go, and where I spent so much time as a little boy, and it's just a beautiful alpine lakes back in there. You can drive up to some of the lakes, hike to others. It's just an extraordinary environment with the granites and the perched lakes carved out by glaciers, and it's wonderful. Good fishing, good hiking, just good being. So going back down to 395 and going north a ways, pretty soon you'll come to the turnoff that takes you to the east, about 13 miles over to Bodie. And I know you've had Bodie on the show before.
Right, right, the ghost town of Bodie.
Yeah, Bodie is wonderful. It's now a state historic park, and it is one of the most intact. It's held in what they call a form of arrested decay.
Right.
They're letting it, it'll gradually disintegrate, but they are trying to slow that process down. So you get out of this very beautiful but harsh land where Bodie's located. Bodie was a mining town in the mid to late 19th century. It boomed for a while. It was a rough, wild, and woolly place. Many of the structures and the mining structures are still there. The state park staff and docents interpret the history of it very, very well, and you can really feel in that harsh, high, dry climate what a challenging life it was to come and seek your wealth from the western frontier. And so Bodie's a great place to visit. Back down on 395, you go downhill and you end up in the little town of Bridgeport, which is also, as Lee Vining is as well, another good little base camp for motels if you'd like to stay in a motel and have access to the Sierra to the west. And then on north you go, and that ultimately takes you up past Topaz Lake up to Carson City, Nevada. And all along the way, it's very, very beautiful. And you pass several of the main roads that lead you over the Sierra Nevada out to the west, Sonora Pass, ultimately Monitor Pass, some of those roads that are all worth driving and lead to other adventures.
And as we start to wrap this up, you've taken a lot of pictures, you've done a lot of video in that area, and are a visual person. Describe to us the one picture that comes to mind when we talk about that area.
Oh, what a great question, Chris. Oh my gosh. Well, I have many, unfortunately. But some of them had to do with Galen Rowell.
Okay.
I spent time with Galen while he's photographing it. And I really recommend getting up, let's say you're staying in Bishop, getting up early in the morning, as Galen would do or any good photographer would do, and catch that early morning light.
The magic hour. Mm-hmm.
The magic hour as it illuminates the Sierra, casts that glow of fresh light on the crest of the Sierra Nevada to the west, begins to pick up some of the light below in the Owens Valley, deep below. I have many wonderful moments thinking of the pictures that Galen took, and you can see them at the Mountain Light Gallery, for example, that really evoke that era. He and Barbara traveled all over the world, as I said, all the continents, remote places, beautiful places, fascinating places. They chose to live in Bishop because they believed of all the great places they had been, this was their home. And this was the place that every single morning would reveal to them some beautiful sight, some extraordinary scene that would live with them forever and live with the rest of us forever. I would just add also photographs of the bristlecone pines. And we were up there in the rain one day, and to watch the bark glisten in the dampness sticks in my mind very, very much. There are many, and if you go, you'll find your own.
The best day you had in the Eastern Sierra?
In television, we do these things called stand-ups.
Sure.
You know, where I talk directly to the camera and say something, and then maybe we go off and do a story. I did a stand-up one day which said, I never have had a bad day in the Eastern Sierra. So that question, the best day is a really, really hard one, when I've had nothing but good ones. Can I give two answers?
Sure, we'll give you two.
One was Galen and Barbara. We did a story. If you go to my website, you can see it. But we did a story with them. Barbara was a pilot. We took off from Bishop, and we flew along the crest of the Sierra Nevada all the way down to Whitney. We circled around Whitney. Mm. Got these wonderful video shots and hanging out with a couple people whom I really admired and liked a lot. And all of us seeing this mountain range, and we'd each seen it about 42 billion times, for all of us to have the same childlike enthusiasm for what we were looking at and to be excited and blown away by what we saw, it doesn't get better than that. Galen and I went up into the White Mountains to look at bighorn sheep, because there are bighorn sheep in those mountains, and we were getting some great shots of them, and just as we were finishing up, the full moon came up over the White Mountains, and it was just, we started howling at the moon. So that was a pretty perfect day. The other one, I would say, it's also on my website, I just did a little short essay about the Virginia Lakes and how much they meant to me personally, because they were places that tie back to my family roots. They were places where I learned to fall in love with mountains and fall in love with nature. I had nothing but excitement every time I went. And so for me to go back as an adult and say, this place means a lot to me, and to be in this place that did mean a lot to me, that was pretty neat.
Two final questions. First one, you really know you're in the Eastern Sierras when what?
Again, another great question. I really know I'm in the Eastern Sierra when I smell the sage and my eyes are filled with grandeur.
Okay. And if you had to summarize that area in three words, what three words?
Drop dead beautiful.
All right. Now, you've mentioned your website. We should give people a reference to that, because you are now doing an online show, having the problems that Channel 4 is having here. You haven't stopped making wonderful travel videos. So if you could give us your URL, that would be terrific.
Well, thanks, Chris. Yeah, we have a website, www.openroad.tv. Not .com or .net, but openroad.tv. We're calling it the Traveler's Video Guide to the American West. It'll be a partner with our new television series. Our idea with it is to get all of our great stuff up there that we've done for so many years. We have this great library of stuff. We're adding new things. We want it to be a great resource for people who share our passion for travel and adventure anywhere in the world, but especially as it relates to the West. And then to invite people to come and send us their great stuff. You know, we'll give you our best pictures and video and thoughts and ideas and linkages, and we hope it's useful to you. But please send us yours. Add to what we have. Enrich what we have. Show us things that we don't know. And maybe together we can have a real community of interest about traveling in the West, and the other piece being about conserving and protecting it. We don't bang people over the head with this, but we have a really strong ethic amongst ourselves as a team of people that we really want to encourage people to enjoy the West, but then to also to help protect its historic, its natural, and its cultural wonders for generations to come. It's a special place on Earth. It has many threats to it. If we can play a tiny role in helping leave it a little better than we found it, that would make us feel pretty good.
Well, Doug, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing not just some of your experience, but some of your passion for this particular part of the country.
Well, thanks, Chris. I'm really honored to be invited. Thanks for all the questions. And unfortunately, I can get awfully long-winded, but boy, it's a great place. Go enjoy it. And I encourage everybody who's listening to get there and let us know what you find.
And thanks so much for coming.
Thanks, Chris.
I have one internet resource for you today. Since we're talking about a road trip today, the resource is mapness.net. And Mapness is a place that you can go to create your own custom map that documents a trip complete with your photos or videos. Check that out, mapness.net. In news from the community, I attended the Lonely Planet Blog Awards on Thursday. I did not, unfortunately, win. Unfortunately for me, but fortunately for Craig and Linda of the Indie Travel Podcast, who are friends. What happened is we did win the voting, but there was a second round, which was the judging. And apparently in the judging, the Amateur Traveler lost to the Indie Travel Podcast. So again, congratulations go out to Craig and Linda. I would like to thank all of you who not only supported me, but also wrote me wonderful kind notes. Lottie, Jose, Thelma in particular. Nicole wrote this: "I voted for you. I love your show, although I don't get a chance to listen to it quite as often as my daughter Chloe was born in August. The first time I did listen to Amateur Traveler after she was born, the topic was Acadia National Park. That was a great surprise because we live in Maine, about 4 hours south of the park, and although I've done a lot of traveling around the country and in Europe, I haven't been to the Acadia since I was 8 years old. It was a nice reminder that even though our travel experiences will be different now, there are some great places to explore right in our own state. I also purchased a state park pass recently and can't wait for summer. Now, if only this snow would go away. Thanks for taking the time to put out the show. It is appreciated, Nicole." And Nicole and everyone else, thank you so much for supporting. Even though I didn't win, I certainly felt greatly loved and appreciated. So thank you all. With that, we'll draw this episode of the Amateur Traveler to a close. It is late on Friday night. I just got back from a business trip and the flight was delayed, so we need to get this one out. If you want to contact me, drop me an email at host@amateurtraveler.com. Check me out on Flickr. Go to the Facebook fan page, which there's a link to at amateurtraveler.com, or just leave a comment on this episode. And as always, thanks so much for listening.